Well, friends, this morning I want to make a major confession. Occasionally, my wife Ainsley and I will get into a disagreement. And here's the confession, because I knew that you understood that that's a reality of marriage. But here's the confession. When we're in a disagreement, I usually have the perspective that she has the problem, not me. When we start to disagree about something, I think to myself, this is really her issue. There's some problem that she has. She's not seeing things properly. The issue is hers. You see, it's hard for me to accept that the problem could be mine. And this isn't just true with my relationship with my wife. This isn't true with my relationship with other people. I tend to immediately struggle to believe that I could have the issue, that the problem could be mine. Because you see, friends, I see myself as a pretty good person. I elevate my reasoning. I elevate my communication. I elevate the qualities and the motivations that I think are so good in my life. And I see myself as good. You see, I believe I'm a good husband. I believe that I'm a good father. I'm a good friend. I'm a good boss. I'm a good pastor. I'm good. And when I elevate my goodness, it really is hard for me to see the negative or the problematic things in my life. This was the heart of the story of the prodigal son. You see, Jesus is confronting the Pharisees within the story. The story is not so much about the lost boy. The issue really is tied to the Pharisees, who see themselves as good people who have a hard time believing that anything problematic can come from their life. The story of the prodigal son is found in Luke chapter 15. And the story starts actually in verse 1 and 2. It says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" Jesus is talking to these Pharisees. These Pharisees are the good of society. They're supposed to be the ones who are the epitome of the religious life. They're the ones who are supposed to be the model of everything that's good. And they can't understand in their goodness how Jesus can hang out with those who are bad. And Jesus sees that their goodness is blinding them to their own issues. And so he decides to confront them on the issue of their own goodness. The main character in the story of the prodigal son, to maybe your surprise, is not the lost son. It's the older brother, the good son. And I want to look at his story today, and we look at Luke chapter 15, verses 25 through 32. It says this: "Meanwhile, the older son was in the field, and when he came near the house, he heard music and dancing, and so he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The elder brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I could celebrate with my friends. But when the son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you're always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" The elder brother represents the Pharisees. The Pharisees are those who have followed the rules. They've worked hard. They've stayed close to home. They're the ones that have a good reputation. We can be the good son when it comes to our lives. We can be like the good son, like the Pharisees, doing everything we're supposed to do. And yet, even though we're doing everything that's good, we're the good son, we can be as lost as the prodigal, even when we're close to home. We've got to ask ourselves some significant questions when we find ourselves thinking that we are good people. We've got to ask ourselves some difficult questions to ensure that we are not lost when we're doing everything we think is right. Here's the first question: how much do I value my father? If you're a good son, you ask this question: how much do I value my father? The elder son, the good son, is out in the field, and he hears this music off in the background. He's like really perplexed. What's going on at this time of the day? It doesn't seem right that there'd be a party in the middle of the day, and so he sends one of his servants to find out. servant comes back and says, your father has killed a calf. He's killed this cow for your brother's come home. Your brother who was lost, who squandered everything, he's home and your father's celebrating him. And he wants you to come and he wants you to be part of the party. The elder brother gets angry right away and he refuses to come into the party. And then the father has to come out and talk to him and invite him in, and yet he still refuses to come in to the party. Friends, in this short scene, in just a few verses, we see the good son dishonor his father. The good son dishonors his father. You see, first of all, in those days, the older brother was responsible for bringing reconciliation with other siblings who might have a falling out with their parents, with their father. When this younger brother left and returned home, it was the older brother who was responsible in that culture to bring about reconciliation, and yet he would rather shame his father than to step in and do that. He abdicates his responsibility. He refuses to come into the party, which would have been public insult to all those who had been invited, to not have the older brother there, to stand by his father. It would have been an incredible slap in the face to the father. And lastly, when he's talking to his father, it's so interesting the words that Jesus uses. He never once calls his father or sir, the terms that should have been used as a sign of respect. You see, this good son, this older boy, he dishonors his father by showing a low value of who he is. The Pharisees in Jesus' day did the same thing. Well, they did everything right. They followed all the rules. They went to prayer all the time. They went to church. They did everything they were supposed to do. But the truth is that they dishonored their father. Because when they looked at Jesus hanging out with people who were far from God, they were upset. They didn't think at all about what mattered to the father. They only looked at what offended them, that Jesus was hanging out with people who were so bad, and he should have hung out with the good people. Not once did they think about what their father wanted. Not once did they think about what mattered to God. They dishonored God despite all their good actions. So here's the question. You go to church, you follow the rules, you pray, you read your Bible. How do you know whether or not you dishonor God? How do you know whether or not you are showing low value for God? Well, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31 says, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. Well, whether you're having a Starbucks cup of coffee or you're eating roast beef at home, whether you're driving your car or you're in your government office doing work, whatever you do, make sure you do those things for the glory of God. And this word glory means to honor or to make renown, to make famous. Our actions must show that we are trying to put God at the forefront of everything we do. It's not about our opinions. It's not about our wants. It's not about our likes. But if we truly value God, if we truly honor God, we will put him at the forefront of every single thing we do. A few years ago, I turned 30. Don't ask how many years ago, but a few years ago, I turned 30. We were living in Port Hope, and my wife had put together a birthday party, and I was completely shocked because we had some close friends who showed up. We had some friends we had some relatives show up. We had some friends that were just, they weren't close friends, they were just people that were in our lives, and they showed up. Not only had they taken time out of their schedules to show up to my birthday, they actually brought gifts with me, or for me. I was completely shocked that some people that I might get together with once every few months had brought me a birthday gift. And as we went through this party, I sat in a lawn chair in our backyard, and I was the center of attention. Everybody made sure they talked to me. Everybody wished me a happy birthday. Even where I sat physically, I was the center of attention. And all their schedule for those couple hours were about me. And the gifts that they had sacrificed for were about me. And everything about that moment was about me. No matter what they wanted to do, because I'm sure some of them didn't want to be at my birthday party. I'm sure some of them didn't want to spend money on my birthday gift. They could have bought themselves something. No matter what they felt like, they put me in the center for those couple hours. Friends, if we are truly to show God the value that he has in our lives, if we are truly to honor him, we must make God the center of our party. We have got to put him there regardless of how inconvenient it might be for our schedule, regardless of what sacrifices need to be made, regardless of our personal opinion on things. We must make God the center of everything in our life. And he must be at the forefront. What matters to him must be our first thought. I heard a song just recently off this album by Youth with a Mission from Kona, Hawaii. And this one song has these lyrics. It says, "I'll preach the gospel, die, and be forgotten, as long as you get the glory." And friends, the first part was easy. I'll preach the gospel and die, and as long as you get the glory. But it was the third part of this song, this line that really caught my attention, "and be forgotten." Am I willing to do things for Jesus and be forgotten? Am I really putting him at the forefront? Is he the one who's being renowned? Do I show him the value by glorifying God in everything I do? From the moment I wake up on a Monday morning to the time I go to bed on a Saturday or Sunday night, have I shown God the glory? Has he been in the center of my party? Even though I don't understand everything that he might do at times, is he the center? Is he the one that I'm trying to make renowned? Am I giving him the glory? Jesus confronts the Pharisees by telling the story of a man who didn't put his father in the center of his own party, but put his own wishes ahead of his father's. The second question we need to ask ourselves, we find ourselves relating to the good son, is, what's my motivation? The older son says, "All these years I've slaved for you and I've obeyed, but no party. Like, God, I've done all these things. I've worked for you so hard." He says, "Father, I've worked for you so hard, and what I get for all my efforts, for all the extra hours, for all the sweat and all the difficult moments, all I get is no party? Come on." In this moment, he reveals his motivation. He expects to be rewarded for the things that he does, for all his good work. And when that doesn't take place, he becomes resentful and angry. Friends, I want to tell you, you can tell. You can tell what your motivation is with God by how you respond when things don't go your way. When you've given everything you should for God, when you've served him completely and you've been faithful and you've been obedient and you put in extra hours and then you expect something in return and it doesn't come, your response to God in those moments tells you what your motivation is. And if anger comes in, and if resentment comes in, there's a good chance that you were expecting that for your good acts that he would repay you with a party, that he would repay you with something good. You see, our motivation to serve God must not be towards something, but from something. If we are motivated towards benefits, we will become frustrated when our expectations don't get met. Elizabeth Elliot tells an apocryphal story, which just means it's a story that's not in the Bible. It tells a story about Jesus and his disciples, a made-up story. And so Jesus is hanging out with his disciples, and he says to them, he's like, "Guys, we're about to depart for the journey for some of our ministry today. I need each of you to pick up a rock." Peter starts to look around and he thinks, "Man, we got quite the journey ahead of ourselves." And he looks around and he grabs a small pebble. He thinks, Jesus didn't say what size of rock this should be. I'm just going to take the small pebble and it'll be easy. He sticks it in his pocket and he starts walking. They do their morning journey and ministry. Finally, it's lunchtime, and he says to the disciples, "I want you to sit down." He says, "Pull out your rock." Peter pulls out the little pebble, puts it on the table, and Jesus prays, and he says, "Father, would you turn these rocks into bread right now?" And then when Peter opens his eyes, he sees this little piece of bread, and his lunch is over very quickly. Peter's like, "Oh, man, I chose really bad." So Jesus says to them as they finish lunch, "Hey, guys, I want you to pick up another rock." Peter goes, I get it. I understand the game now." And so he looks around and he finds this big boulder, and he picks the boulder up and he starts to carry it, and he puts it in this bag on his back. And I mean, it's weighing him down. It's painful. His back is so sore. And as they begin to journey, He is having a terrible time keeping up, but he keeps thinking to himself, at least I'm going to have quite the dinner tonight. And they start walking and walking and walking, and they do ministry, and now it's dinner time. And just as they're about to sit down, Jesus says, take out your rocks. And Peter's like, yeah, this is the moment. He says, now I want you to take out your rock and throw it in the water. He's completely shocked. Completely shocked. And all the disciples throw their rocks in the water, and they eat dinner. And he says to them, hey, I want you to pick up another rock. And they look at him in frustration. And Jesus looks at the disciples and says this. He says, do you remember what I said to you? Do you remember what I asked you to pick up a rock? Who were you doing it for? Who were you doing it for? Were you doing it for yourselves so that you could get a good meal? Were you doing it for yourselves so something good could come about? Or were you doing it for me? Were you doing it because I asked you to? You see, that's the challenge when you're a good person, is that you can serve God and you do it because you want to get blessed. You do it because you don't want curses to come your way or something negative to happen in your life. You do it for all the wrong reasons. You're doing it towards something. You're hoping to get something back. But what Jesus is looking for, and the point of the story is that when it comes to motivation, we need to be motivated from something, from our love for Him. The older brother should have been motivated towards his father, not because he was expecting return for all his hard work, but because he just loved his dad. Because he loved his dad so much that he just wanted to work for him. Jeremiah 31:33 says, this is the covenant I will make with the people of Israel after that time, declares the Lord. I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts. I will be their God and they will be my people. You know what Jesus is setting the stage for? The conversation he has with a man about which is the greatest law. And Jesus says, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. What's the rules of Christianity? The rules are, if you just love God and you are motivated from your love, you'll do what's right. If you are motivated from a place where there's not a rule book of the things that you need to do to ensure yourselves blessings and prevent the curses, but you simply go, God, I love you so much. It's written on my heart. Your law is written on my heart because I love you so much. I want to be motivated from my love for you. Do I get to serve as a greeter? It's my love for Jesus. Do I get to get up today and preach? It's not because I'm getting a paycheck. It's because my love of Jesus. Do I get to serve in the kids ministry? It's not because they're in desperate need of volunteers. It's because of my love from Jesus. We are motivated from a place of love, not towards blessings. Here's the question I want to confront you with today. If Jesus didn't do another thing for you from this point till the day you died, would you still serve him with everything you have? Like if you knew that he was never going to heal you, if you knew that he was never going to reconcile some things, if he knew that he was never going to step in and help you financially, would your love of God be enough to motivate you towards serving him 110%? Friends, we can come to church and do all the right things. We can do them for the wrong reasons. Are you doing the things you're doing to just ensure you get to heaven? Are you doing all the things you're doing just because that you don't want God's curses to come upon you? Are you doing things towards something? Are you doing it because, man, God is so good. You love him so much. And Jesus confronts the Pharisees because they are doing everything they want because they're hoping for God's favor, and they have stopped serving from a place of love. What's your motivation? Last question. How do I view myself? The father comes to this older son, the good son, and he says, hey, I really want you to come to the party. I mean, we're having a great time in there. I mean, we've got a great DJ, the finest music. There's some of the best food you'll ever eat. And man, there's just so much laughter. Son, come on. Come to the party. Your brother's home. Would you come to the party? And the good son looks at his dad and says, I've slaved for nothing. This son of yours, this mess up, he gets celebrated. And in this moment, he reveals something of his self-righteousness. He's not even willing to call his brother his brother. He disassociates himself from his brother. He sees himself. I have slaved. Look at me. I'm the hard worker. Look at me. I'm the good son. And I have got nothing. But this mess up son of yours, yeah, he doesn't deserve the party. He begins to reveal his self-righteousness. The hard thing when you've been in church for a while, or you've been in a spiritual journey over a period of time, is to prevent self-righteousness from creeping up in your heart. None of us intend to do that, but it's very easy for it to take place when we're doing the right things. The party invitation really reveals the son's pride. You see, he's invited to eat and to drink and to celebrate. But in this son's mind, the party is for somebody unworthy. And in the son's mind, he believes the party should be for somebody worthy. Somebody who does the right things. Somebody who works hard. Somebody who doesn't squander the father's money. He fails to see the benefits of the party have nothing to do with worth, but they have everything to do with the father. And this is key. You see, when self-righteousness creeps into our hearts, we begin to believe that the things and the blessings that have come into our life have to do with the things that we've produced. That we've worked hard, that we've been the slave for the Father, and so the Father's paid us back. But friends, I want you to understand that this son didn't understand that this party had nothing to do with worth. It had to do with the goodness of the Father. You see, neither boy brought anything into this world. Neither boy owned what was needed for the party. Everything about this party was based on the Father. It was the Father who distributed the goodness. It was the Father that created the celebration moment. And the Pharisees had a problem with this. They believed that God's blessing should be based upon one's worthiness. And they determined that worthiness by comparing themselves to other people. And this is where pride gets into our hearts and self-righteousness is we look at what we do for God and we begin to compare ourselves to other people and we place ourselves on a pedestal saying, you know what, I deserve a little bit more than that person. C.S. Lewis writes, as long as you are proud, you cannot know God. A proud man is always looking down on things and people. And of course, as long as you're looking down, you cannot see something that's above you. So key. The good son was so busy looking down on his younger brother, on the unworthiness of the younger brother, on the squandering of the money, on the partying and the prostitutes, on the crazy lifestyle, on the way he treated his father. He looked down on this younger brother. Look at the way you treated your father. That he first of all didn't see how he was treating his father, and he sure didn't see his father's goodness. He wasn't able to look up. A number of years ago, two Shanghai women were talking about this issue of pride. And they were wondering about Hudson Taylor, the great missionary in China, and whether or not he had ever experienced the temptation to be proud of all the things that he had done. And so the two women went to his wife, Maria, and they said, Maria, do you think your husband ever deals with pride? I mean, he's done so many great things here in China, and he's seen so many people come to Christ. Do you think your husband deals with this issue of pride? She thought about it for a few moments and she said, you know what, I don't know. I need to go ask him. And so she left the two women and she went to her husband. She said, Hudson, I need to ask you a question. Are you ever tempted to be proud? He looked up and said, to be proud of what? And she said, all the good things that you've done. You know, all the great things that you've done. And he looked at her and he said these words. I didn't know I had done good things. Now, you might be sitting there or watching online thinking, well, he was just disconnected from reality. He's denying reality. He's missing the fact that he's done these good things. But in Hudson Taylor's mind, this was his perspective. That he had been involved in a lot of great works. But everything good that had been accomplished had been done through the Father. That it was the Father's doing. Every person who had ever got saved, Hudson Taylor was simply a vessel in the hands of God for them to get saved. Every great miracle that took place, it wasn't because of Hudson's worthiness or unworthiness. It wasn't because he worked hard, didn't work hard. It was because of the goodness of the Father working through his life. And friends, this is what you need to understand, is that pride misses the fact that every good thing that comes in your life or through your life is from the Father. Through the Father. Listen, we are all on the same page. Some of us have some gifting, some of us don't. Some of us work at this level of hardness. Does that make sense? This drive, and some have this drive. And we can say these people are the ones who deserve more from God. But the truth is that we are all broken sinners. And without God, nothing gets accomplished. But with the good Father, all kinds of things happen. With the good Father, anything can take place. We sang about this morning. It's not your worthiness. It's not your giftings. It's not you. It's about the Father. And when we begin to think that our worthiness produces things, when we begin to think it's us that accomplishes great things, friends, we can slip into the place of self-righteousness and pride and miss the fact that the party is about the Father. Every blessing is about the Father. Every good thing is about the Father. I'm thankful for things that I've been able to do in my life. And there have been moments I've been tempted to think, man, look at what I accomplished there. But I remember the shy little 15-year-old teenager who wanted God to pick somebody else for ministry because I didn't think he could use me. Truth is, if it was just me by myself, I couldn't have ever seen some of the things I've seen. But I got put into the hands of God. And I just got to be part of the great things that he was doing. I just got to see some miracles. I just got to see some people get saved. I just got to see some things that blow my mind. And they're not based upon my worthiness or in my even my giftings. They're about me just being allowed to be part of the Father's party. Friends, please don't allow yourselves to believe that your worthiness produces the great things in life. But may your focus be on the Father. Parties are only thrown because of the Father. Blessings only come because of the Father. Accomplishments only come because of the Father. Every good thing belongs to God and is from God. Listen to this verse in Romans chapter 3, verse 10. There is no one righteous, not even one. So let me encourage you today. You're not righteous. Isn't that encouraging? Friends online, isn't that encouraging? You're not righteous. You're not the good son. We are all sinners in the hands of God. But his goodness works in our lives. His goodness allows great parties to take place. And we need to ask ourselves how we've been viewing ourselves as the people who deserve something because of our worthiness. Or do we see ourselves as humble individuals that are being invited to God's party? Let me close this up. So interesting that the story doesn't end. And I don't know if you've noticed that, but the father tells the son that he has access to everything of the father, and we'll talk about that in a few weeks. Has access to everything of the father, but the son was dead and is now alive, the younger son. The younger son was lost but is now found. And then Jesus just ends the passage. You ever wonder why? I think Jesus was giving a moment for the Pharisees to be confronted by these three questions. But doesn't finish the story because the story doesn't need to have its conclusion at that moment. He opens it up for them to write their story. You may have been like the older brother. You may have been like the younger brother. But you have the opportunity to write the end of the story. And friends, regardless of where you're at, whether you feel like you're the younger son or you feel like you're the older son, wherever you're at, the story doesn't end today. You have the opportunity to write the end of the story. You need to ask yourself these questions. How much do you value your father? Maybe this is the day where you begin to make some shifts and you begin to put him in the center of your backyard. You bring him the gifts. And even though you don't understand everything, you let him know that he matters. He gets the glory. Maybe you ask the question, what's your motivation? Maybe that's the one you need to wrestle with. And you've been believing that if I do this, this, and this, then God will pay me back. God surely owes me for this. Maybe that's been your motivation to get something. You've been motivated towards something. But maybe you need to make a shift for the remainder of your life that says, God, I'm not serving you anymore because I want something. I'm serving you because from a place of from. Because I love you. because your law is written on my heart, because I love you with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. Let me serve. Let me be an usher. Let me be in the kids' ministry. Let me be sent to the mission field. Let me do this and this, not because I want something from you, Pastor, or something from somebody else, but because I'm doing it because I love Jesus so much. What would happen if our church grabbed hold of that mentality where we were motivated from a love for our God that says, from this place of love, I want to serve him. What's your motivation? And lastly, maybe you need to ask the question, how do you view yourself? Do you see yourself as worthy, above everybody else, getting the blessings, thankful that you're not like this person, seeing yourself deserving a party? Or do you simply understand that without the Father's goodness, that you would be just like the younger son? Do you see yourself as simply a vessel in the hands of the Father and saying, God, just do great things through my life for your glory? How do you see yourself? What will you do to end your story well? Today you have an opportunity to begin writing the end of your story. Some of you, you only have a few pages left. Others, you've got chapters still to write. But you have the opportunity to write the end of your story, to say, I want my life to be pleasing to the Father. I want, when the Father invites me to the party, I want to show up. I want to do my responsibility. I want to live for his glory out of an unbelievable love. Today is your opportunity to write your stories. Friends, we either will fall into the place of the younger son or the older son. The temptation is to swing in one of two ways. Today, would you make sure that you write a different story? I want to pray one final prayer with you before we conclude. Jesus, I'm asking today that your hand would be with my friends who are online and in this room. God, I pray that we would not fall prey to the temptation the Pharisees did, to the temptation that the older brother did, the good son. I pray that we would constantly ask ourselves difficult questions. We would ask ourselves how much we value the Father, whether we make him the center of our life, the center of our world in everything we do. I pray we would ask ourselves what our motivation is, and that God, we would ensure that everything we would do, it would be springboarded from a place of love for you. And I'm asking God that we would ask ourselves how we view ourselves. God, let us not see ourselves as people worthy of the party, the blessings. We would not compare ourselves to one another and think, man, I'm so much better than that person. But God, we would realize that we are all just individuals broken by sin who get invited to the Father's party, not based on our worthiness, but based on the goodness of Dad. God, let that be in our hearts constantly. And as we leave this place today, let us write the end of this story that would be so pleasing to you that the Father would celebrate with his boys a great, great celebration. I ask in Jesus' name, amen.